This is Basketball History 101 with Rick Loaiza.
Welcome back to award-winning Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network. I am your host, Rick Loaiza, and this is a podcast where we bring to life some of the forgotten stories from basketball history. We are bringing old-school basketball to a new-school audience, and today we bring you the story of Arnold Red Auerbach. And I have to be honest and say that this was a story that I had a hard time putting together. If you have listened to this podcast for any length of time, then you know that I have mentioned Red Auerbach many times. I mean, it is difficult to talk about basketball history, especially Boston Celtics history, and not talk about Auerbach. The man was instrumental in 16 championships. He coached the Celtics to 9 NBA championships and then was a general manager for 7 more championships. At the time that he had retired from coaching in 1966, he had won 45% of all the NBA championships. And even though he passed away 17 years ago, he still owns 21% of all NBA championships as a coach or executive. The man also held the record for most regular season victories and most playoff victories by a coach, and he held those records for decades. Both of those records have since been broken. For regular season victories, he now stands at number 12 with 938 victories. And remember, he had not coached in nearly 57 years. For playoff victories, he still sits at number 7, tied with Steve Kerr with 99 victories. As far as playoff victories are concerned, he is at a disadvantage, as back in his day, the playoffs were usually only 2 rounds. Today, the NBA playoffs are 4 rounds, which gives current coaches more opportunities to rack up victories. In any case, the man is arguably the single most influential figure in NBA history, particularly during the early days of the league. But I am getting a little bit ahead of myself. So let's go back to the beginning of the story and to see where Auerbach came from. And for that, I need to go all the way back to even before he was born. His father, Hyman Auerbach, emigrated from Minsk, which is in modern-day Belarus. He left Minsk in the very early 1900s, and Hyman made his way to the United States with his 2 older brothers, Sam and Louis. The 3 Auerbach brothers settled in Brooklyn, New York, and they originally settled in a Jewish neighborhood, which was comfortable for them because they were Jewish. Hyman met and married an American-born girl from the neighborhood by the name of Marie, and together, they had 4 children. The first was Victor in 1914, then Red in 1917. A 3rd brother named Zangwell arrived in 1921, followed by Florence, the only girl, in 1925. Now, of these 4 Auerbach kids, Red was the only one who was interested in sports. His family could really not understand his fascination with sports, especially basketball. It was the only thing that he wanted to do. Now, remember, back in the 1920s and 1930s, professional sports were not what they are today. The NBA did not even exist yet. The only way to make money in basketball was to play for an independent barnstorming team like the Harlem Globetrotters or the New York Rens. And both of those particular teams were made up exclusively of black players. Auerbach stood no chance. Even the barnstorming teams that did feature white players were not a viable career option because nobody was getting rich playing basketball. Professional basketball players back then made very little money, and most players had to have a side job in order to pay their bills. Even baseball players back then made only enough money to live in a middle-class neighborhood, unless your name was Babe Ruth. About the only athletes who were making real money back then were the very top 3 or 4 boxing heavyweights. Anyway, the Auerbach family thought that young Red was wasting his time devoting so much energy to basketball when he should have been putting time into his studies and getting a college degree. Getting a college degree was the most surefire way for an immigrant or the children of immigrants to make his way up the socioeconomic ladder. But Red would not be deterred. He loved the game of basketball and developed a reputation for going all out every second that he was on the court. He graduated from high school in 1935 and was named second team All-Brooklyn. At this point, Red had grown to his full height of 5'9" or 175 centimeters. He decided to take his basketball talent to Seth Lowe Junior College in Manhattan. At the time, Seth Lowe Junior College was run by Columbia University of the Ivy League, and they had the same entrance requirements and tuition as Columbia. In a very sad and dark part of Columbia's history, Seth Lowe Junior College is where Columbia would send the Jewish and Italian students in order to keep them away from the main campus. Now, the great thing for Auerbach was that he played well enough to earn himself a basketball scholarship to George Washington University in Washington, D.C. While he did not know it at the time, he would become a resident of Washington Washington, D.C. for the rest of his life, even while he was working for the Celtics. Now, this is where he really began to learn the game of basketball from the big picture perspective. Well, this is also a good place for me to take a break, and I'll be right back with more on Red Auerbach.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.
Hello, sports history fans. I'm Ross from the podcast Pigskin Tales. You're about to jump into another thrilling sports history moment, but first, let's dive into today's sponsor, just in time for the holiday season. Introducing Art of Words, the brainchild of word artist Dan Duffy from Philadelphia. Dan meticulously crafts stunning images by handwriting relevant words from some of the greatest sports moments in time. These unique, budget-friendly illustrations are the perfect gift, sparking cherished memories and capturing hearts. Choose from city skylines, sports, history, and musicians to find a piece for everyone. And here's the exciting part. For that sports fanatic in your life, gift them a piece of their favorite team or player's history. Art of Words tells a compelling story. Explore collegiate stadiums, each meticulously crafted with every football victory etched into words. Or venture into baseball stadiums, handwritten with every player from the team's illustrious history. My favorite on the site is Bryce Harper 2021 MVP year. Because I'm a big stats guy, I think that's one of the coolest things ever. Check it out. Don't wait. Order a print today for yourself and your loved one this holiday season. Transform your wall into a gallery of captivating art and surprise your family and friends with a print of their own. Use code SHN15 at artofwords.com for a 15% discount on your order in November and December. Visit Art of Words, where words magically transform into stunning art, evoking cherished memories and touching the hearts of those who you care about. Again, use the code SHN15 for 15% off at artofwords.com.
Welcome back to the show, and let us continue with the story of Red Auerbach. As I mentioned before the break, George Washington University, or GWU, is where he really began to learn the game of basketball. His coach was Bill Reinhardt, and Reinhardt would be a coaching mentor for Red for decades. Red soaked up everything that Coach Reinhardt had to teach him. He really began to learn the ins and outs of basketball from the coach's perspective, not just the player's perspective. Now, there are virtually no records left of how well Auerbach actually played or how many points he scored, but he was the starting point guard and played with 100% abandon on the court. He was smart and rarely made mistakes with the ball, and he was also named team captain for his senior year at GWU. The other great thing that happened for Auerbach at GWU was that he met his wife, Dorothy. She was the daughter of a local Washington, D.C. doctor. Her parents were not too sure about Auerbach at first. They were very concerned over his future prospects. Even though he had earned his degree at GWU, his heart was set on going into basketball. They were concerned that he would not make enough money to properly support Dorothy at the same level that she was supported by her physician father. In the end, Auerbach received the blessing of his future father-in-law, and he married Dorothy. Now, upon graduation at GWU, UU, Auerbach took a job teaching and coaching the basketball team at St. Albans Preparatory Academy. Using everything he learned from his college coach, he coached St. Albans to a winning season. They were playing the first round of the playoffs and lost by a single point when the point guard decided to try to make a fancy pass and turn the ball over. That was the day that Auerbach set his mind on the idea that the only thing that mattered was winning the ball game. No fancy passes from any of his players. Winning was all that mattered. So make a regular pass and make sure the ball gets to where it is going. Now, while he was coaching at St. Albans, he was working on his master's degree from GWU. After a couple of years, he had his graduate degree and moved over to Roosevelt High School, also in Washington, D.C., where he continued teaching and coaching basketball. And he did that also while refereeing and working the night shift for the Baltimore Sun newspaper by answering the telephones. And that was around the time that the United States was attacked at Pearl Harbor by the Japanese and entered World War II. Auerbach decided to join the Navy, and in the Navy, he was put in charge of physical education and for a short time worked under boxing great Gene Tunney. He was in charge of organizing basketball games for the sailors as a way of keeping them in shape. And as luck would have it, this is also where Auerbach began to develop his scouting network that he was famous for. In the Navy, he made friends with sailors from all over the United States, and he would leverage those relationships when he was in the NBA. He would call on old Navy buddies to ask about a certain college player. The friend would then scout the game and report back to Auerbach how well the player had performed. And when Auerbach was in the NBA, it seemed that he knew a basketball guy in nearly every city in the country, and they were more than happy to help him out. Now, after his time in the Navy, he returned to Washington, D.C. to start his real life. As it happened, he was reading the newspaper, and by the way, Auerbach was always reading the newspaper. But in the paper, he saw a story about a brand new professional basketball league that was starting up. The league was called the Basketball Association of America, or BAA. Now, that new league was going to start with 11 teams. They announced the cities where they were going to have those teams, like New York, Toronto, Philadelphia, St. Louis, Cleveland, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Chicago, Providence, Boston, and most importantly, Washington, D.C., where he already lived. He cold called the Washington Capitals and lobbied for the job of head coach. Now remember, he had only coached a few years of high school basketball and a few years in the Navy. He really did not have that much coaching experience, at least not enough to be seriously considered for a professional coaching job. But the owners did not know that much about basketball, and Auerbach had a way of presenting himself and his ideas really well. And he had very strong ideas of how to put together a basketball team that would win. He also wanted the job with one condition, that he have final say on all player personnel matters. That meant that he wanted no interference from ownership on whom he drafted, signed, or traded. He decided that he could not adequately coach a team unless he was the total boss of the team. Now somehow, he actually got the job, and Red Auerbach was one of the original 11 head coaches in the BAA for the 1946-1947 season. Now by the way, the BAA is today known as the NBA. And man, did Auerbach prove himself as a coach. Back in that very first season, the BAA had a 60-game schedule, and Auerbach coached the Capitals to a record of 49 wins and 11 losses. That would be like winning 67 games in the current 82-game NBA schedule. The 49 wins that the Capitals secured was a full 10 games better than the second-best team in the league, the Chicago Stags, who somehow played 61 games but finished with a record of 39-22. Now, the Capitals were sure to win the playoffs. I mean, they had proven it all season long. They were simply better than everybody else in the league. However, they somehow lost the semifinals 4-2 against those same Chicago Stags. It was an embarrassing finish for Auerbach. He had coached his team to the best record in the league, but could not win when it counted. He returned the following season when the BAA decided to have a shortened 48-game season. The Capitals struggled with injuries and finished with a record of 28-20. Now, because they had tied the Chicago Stags in the standings, they had to play a one-game playoff for the final spot in the playoffs. Washington lost the game 74-70. It was another disappointing ending to a season. Auerbach was personally frustrated. He knew he could coach, and he knew that he had good talent on his team, but somehow his team could not win in the playoffs. In his third and final season with the Washington Capitals, he coached them to the best record in the Eastern Division with a record of 38-22, with the BAA returning to a 60-game schedule. Now this time, his team made it all the way to the finals. However, the Capitals ran into a team that had just joined the league that year after jumping over from a different professional league. That team was the Minneapolis Lakers, and they featured Hall of Fame front court of George Mikan, Vern Mikkelsen, and Jim Pollard. The Capitals were no match for the Lakers, who had won the championship 4-2. It was here that the Capitals' ownership began to lose confidence in Red Auerbach, and they fired him. He was out of a job and trying to figure out where to go next. Now, the word had gotten out that he was a great coach. I mean, he proved it in 3 seasons of coaching in the BAA. Any team would be lucky to have him. But the hard part was finding a team that had an opening at the head coaching position. And it was a time to leverage his network of Navy guys who could help him find a team that needed a head coach. And I'll share where he landed in our next episode. So that is it for part one of the Red Auerbach story. Join us next week when we share where he landed after getting fired by the Capitals. And it wasn't the Celtics. He coached elsewhere before finally landing in Boston. Now that's next time on Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear. SportsHistoryNetwork.com to find out more about this and other sports history podcasts. If you like what you hear, please hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast, and check out our page on Facebook. It's called Basketball History 101 Podcast. There you will find shorter historical posts as well as comments and discussion starters on today's game. I'll also announce there when new episodes come out. I want to thank my producer and editor, Jacob Loiza. Join us each week as we continue to mine the history of basketball for more great stories from the past. Take care and see you soon.